Hello everybody and welcome to The Integrated Home, the podcast that's produced by the Home Integration Community for the Home Integration Community. My name is Jeff Hayward and today we're at the Keff Gallery in London, a wonderful place that's a must-see for anyone in the integration industry. And we're here to look at the role of AV integrators in luxury property developments and how that fits with the task of AV consultants and the design and specification process. Welcome to The Integrated Home. Now, I am delighted to have three very special guests with me for this conversation. James Taylor, Sam Brunsdon and Mark Reynolds. Welcome all to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Now, before we begin, can you just give us a brief introduction into who you are and your roles? So, James, I'm going to put you on first. What would you like to say?
So, my name is James. I'm a senior associate at Banda Property on the design studio side. We're working on several projects all over the world. It's a really interesting place to be at the moment.
I bet. And Sam?
So yes, I'm founder of Dynetech. We're a technology consultancy business and we're mostly focused in sort of commercial, hospitality and residential sort of sectors.
And I'm Mark, the founder of Woven Technology Consultants, and similar to Sam, very much focused, but in the residential technology sector.
Fantastic. So I'm going to kick off with one of those comments that I hear a lot about. Technology integrators should be appointed very early in the design stage. I hear that a lot. And from what I understand, there would be significant benefits to them being on board at the same time as the MEP consultants are appointed. Sam, why do you think this doesn't typically happen?
I think it's probably historic from many years ago where we were treated as more of a contractor rather than a designer. So it was always more of a, you know, case of us coming on board closer to tender or even part of the construction process. But the reality is that over the years it's changed and, you know, the digital home is a big part of how you approach your project. So I think it's more about changing people's perception of what we do and how we can actually help clients on that journey early on. But I think, yes, for me, I think it's just historic.
I think it's also part of the, if you look at the RIBA project works plan, it's very much focused that especially subcontractors come in later on. You know, kitchen designers, they come in partway through stage four. A technology integrator actually is a specialist subcontractor because they're doing the installation at the end of the day, same as a kitchen company. Whereas actually an MEP consultant is purely there to do the design specification and monitor it through the build. So they can be brought on early. And that's where the plan of works from REBA is very clear that specialist consultants come in stage two, sometimes stage three. And that, I think, is quite a key difference.
Mm. What do Banda do? Is that something that you're good at, bringing integrators on early?
We try to. I think it's very dependent on the type of project. We have a variety of projects from sort of private residential houses in and around the UK and further afield, and then multi-unit residential developments and for hotel brands all over the world. And there is a difference. I think private clients, you often have to educate them about the process, which can take a while, and they're cautious. You know, I think laying out for MEP consultants, landscape designers, you know, early on, I think there is a sort of a reluctance to sort of have another consultant on board. You have to educate them. So it's
too many cooks at an early stage. Right. Just means exactly. More compromise, perhaps. I mean, are there examples you can give, Sam, of where it really does benefit, or where the problems of bringing somebody on too late causes significant issues?
Yeah, it can go either way. So I could kind of say from, you know, a project I was involved in earlier on in the year where it was a D&B type project. So it was down to the builder to obviously design the project, carry that through. But the issue with that had is when they created the employer requirements, and this was handled by the design teams on the project, so MEP, the designers, principal designer, they actually didn't get the right requirements together. So when this came to the D&B contractor, it was specified as a really smart home with all integration, with HVAC, door entry, all of that stuff. When they had the bids back, it was well over what was estimated. And it wasn't right because the client was actually in their 70s and didn't want a smart home. But the problem with it is that a lot of these tenders, you know, they're going to the point where MEP consultants aren't sure about what smart home needs to be. It was a big project. It was a 22,000 square foot house. Mm. And They just look at a previous specification and go, well, we did it on that project, we'll do it on this project. And the issue that you've got with that is once it's gone to a D&B contractor and they've put a price in and that's done, to then change the design and change what you're doing for the project adds further cost, it'll add delay. So this is a situation where actually it was over-engineered.
Mm.
So this is kind of, I think, the opposite of what people expect. They expect a technology consultant to come on and actually over-engineer or put too much technology in, whereas I actually see it happen the other way as well.
Interesting.
And then all you're doing is having to reduce the scope, you're having to change the project scope, and what you're adding then is further cost from the D&B contractor, and you know, you're going to add further delay.
So it's an education thing that needs to go right through the construction chain, really.
Yes.
And from the client as well, you mentioned there about a smart home. The client's interpretation of a smart home can vary. Okay. I think there's huge variation. The clients don't often understand how smart a home can actually be. So I think there is that education, again, to the client, and with a budget, a sensitive awareness of a budget related to each of that those technologies.
100%.
I mean, that is challenging because a lot of our industry talks about, well, imagine what you think you want and we can deliver it. Yeah. So it's kind of so open.
Yeah, there's a massive issue in terms of actually people being able to understand needs and actually evaluate what someone's need is. So I think if people go in and approach conversations as being very much technology focused, that's not actually a good discovery process with a client. I mean, when you talk about interiors and the flow of a property, James, it's a different process. You're not saying, where do you want your kitchen? Where do you want this? So you're exploring it. And the same is true with technology. It's like, I think I've been fortunate to work with James on some projects, and one of those, the client was describing, oh, we'd like to have a party. Okay, well, what sort of party? How many people? Do you have friends that come and DJ? And actually, so from that, we're not talking about the technology, we're talking about how they live, how they party. And then we can evaluate, okay, where's your budget? How many people are there? What's the audio performance? Okay, you don't need a DJ. You've got your Spotify playlists and you've set that up and you're happy to stream that. That's a totally different conversation. It's not technology focused. And that's where we ultimately need to be starting from.
Yeah, and that would be the sort of conversation clients would have with an interior designer. So why aren't they having those with technology integrators?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think when we meet a client, it's quite often for the first time, and you have to build up a relationship, you have to build trust, and the complexities of a home renovation are endless. And I think you have to really go slowly, and a brief is something that evolves. We have several templates to determine, an AV brief or a wardrobe, a dressing room brief, a bathroom brief. I think a brief has to evolve over time, and I'm afraid quite often, sadly, technology comes in initially lightly, and then it evolves as everything does with a more detailed brief throughout the concept process.
Mm.
But I think one of your, where things go wrong, or where the early introduction of technology consultancy helps. I mean, this is going back a few years when I was an integrator, but I was working on a project in the Middle East, and I was fortunate enough to have done the phase one, and phase two came in. And the designers and myself were chatting, and they were going, oh yeah, this client really wants this to be a really high performing media space, but we've got this lovely artwork on the wall, we don't want anything on the wall, but he's got to have high performance speakers, high performance TV, doesn't want projector. So how do we achieve this? So actually my involvement early on allowed us an undercroft to be built, and I mean a proper undercroft with very high performing speakers rising up out of it, TV rising up out of it, very large TV rising up. You can't do that if you get someone brought on late in the day, or you can if the client's got pots of money and decides that stuff it doesn't matter, we'll dig a new hole for it.
Yeah, but the chances of that happening become rarer and rarer the deeper the project goes into its timeline.
And then you end up with a compromise between the technology and the interiors, and should technology be dominating the interior? Arguably not in many instances.
So do you think, Sam, that technology integrators, there's an approach that's not quite right when it comes to design and specification?
Yeah, and I don't think this is something where the situation's been skewed on purpose. I think, if you go back 20 years, there were a handful of integrators. We all kind of know who they were. And that's just how it was. You know, you didn't have a wide range of consultants and integrators to go to. So 20 years ago is kind of like, that's how the industry was. But things have changed. You know, CEDIA have over 3,500 members worldwide. So there is now a lot of choice, but we've stuck in the old model. So yeah, the sad reality is that, you know, if you go to an integrator, they are always going to be based on profit margin on the product. They're going to be brand biased as well, because, you know, they're there to sell the brands they want to sell, what they've got in stock, what they do use time and time again. You're never going to get a neutral advice from an integrator because they are always going to sell something. And I always use this analogy, would you go to a structural engineer if they sold you the concrete? Because, you know, it's that reality. We have consultants, MEP consultants, for this purpose, because they give neutral advice and they design the system right for the client. An integrator, as best, as great as they can be, and I know a lot of them, and they, some of them are great in how they approach the project, they always have to sell a product at the end of the day. Mm. And whatever advice they give you, we'll have to come back to that.
And that's interesting, because you can't have MEP consultants doing a technology brief because they don't really get it.
No, but they don't really get it, but it's still often lumped into their package.
Of course.
Whether that's by the project managers, cost consultants, QSs, it's still often there. So the security brief will be in there, the building management system will be in there. And so quite often you'll get to potentially a stage four brief and potentially a tender brief where it says, right, there's going to be a lighting control system. It is going to be one of these two. You're going to have an intruder alarm system, and it needs to be grade two. No consideration at that point as to the impact of those devices, because it's not been coordinated with interiors. It's just, right, you're going to have that. So there's a massive load of work post stage four that these guys, that James and his team have to do in terms of, right, okay, how do we position all of these? But all of that design work should have been done already before it's actually gone into construction.
And ultimately, James, if we want to get to the point where the brief is what the integrator is responding to, that's an experience thing that you're wanting to deliver for clients, isn't it? So
absolutely. And yeah, it's not easy. And when it doesn't work, it's, we find ourselves sort of trying to shoehorn subwoofers into side tables, you know, and things that just wouldn't naturally fit. And had we known earlier, we would have put them in nicely into joinery with a fabric panel in front. You wouldn't even know they're there. So it definitely, we're problem solvers ultimately. We will make it work, but I think the earlier we can plan for these things, it's all in the planning, then we stand a better chance.
And have you found, when you've worked directly with integrators without a proper design brief going to them, that you get a slightly wonky kind of thing back?
Totally. And that example of the subwoofer in the side table is one, yeah, you end up sort of making compromises, and, you know, you've sold a vision to the client that you ultimately struggle to deliver because of something that's been thrown in at the last minute, and you're thinking, that's not quite how we planned it, you know, trying to hide 100-inch TVs. That's a rarity. We normally plan for those, but, you know, speakers and you know, all sorts of automation and things is kind of hard.
And this product-led approach that you talked about, Sam, I mean, you say that that's a kind of historic thing, that integrators have really always presented themselves like that, and they're still doing it. But
yeah, it's a difficult, in the AV market, what I think a lot of clients don't realize is that there is a huge swing of different product profit margins between manufacturers, different distributors. And there is a race to the bottom in our industry. And in construction, it's the biggest problem we have. It's so toxic. And obviously, when you work with certain manufacturers that give you bigger margins, you're going to steer towards those. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right product for the client. You know, I used to have a lot of clients come to me, and when I was an integrator, and sort of say, oh, I want Sonos, just a couple of TVs and this. And I used to think, oh God, how am I going to sell this? You know, because I just know that you make no money out of Sonos as an integrator. But actually, it sometimes was the right product for the client, you know, because it's easy. It was a consumer level that they only wanted a bit of background music. But essentially, as an integrator, I always felt like I had to go and find something else, or try and promote another speaker brand, or try and find something else I could make money out of. So it's an issue that I don't think clients quite often realize. And there's quite often other incentives that go behind the scenes of these. So, you know, certain distributors will give bigger incentives if you buy more products from them. So suddenly you're in a world where is the client actually getting the right product for them, or are they just buying a product because that becomes part of a portfolio that the integrator is buying from a distributor?
Mm.
And in a world of thousands of AV brands, it's funny how we keep seeing the same products over and over again.
Yeah. No easy solution to that though, Mark.
Well, I think it's, you can understand it from a an integrator's perspective. If you're using consistent products, you can template, you've got
a
process that you can deliver. Yeah. Your installation team are familiar with it. Like Sam's saying, you're focused on where your margin is. I think technology overall is becoming far more commoditized in the larger projects. So is it any different from electrical contractors and they're supplying, sockets and things like that, to light fittings? Where do they make their money? They're making money by charging labor correctly and being very clear on what is included, having a schedule of rates and saying, okay, you want to add a socket, you want to add a downlight, that's X amount plus the actual fitting. As integrators, that's rarely, rarely happens. So the bulk of the margin, the bulk of the company's profit is coming through on the equipment rather than the labor.
Yeah. You deal with hospitality projects?
Starting to,
but you're not exclusively just about luxury residential. I mean, are there...
We have been, I think, but we are sort of spanning further afield. We just finished an aeroplane, which was quite fun.
How I'd describe that.
Whole other world of challenges, weights and whatnot. Yeah. But I think the intent is any kind of project that has some interesting challenges, the brand and the aesthetic, we sort of like to apply that to various fields. We're venturing into sort of perhaps some boutique hotels that have some lovely sort of restaurants and things, and also some of the multi-residential developments have amenity spaces, pools and gyms downstairs, so sort of moving into the commercial world, but not too heavily.
And in terms of the integrator profile that you're dealing with, do you recognize some of the evolution or non-evolution that Mark and Sam have talked about with integrators?
Yeah, it is changing, I think. And you get with a larger, sort of more commercially focused project, you do get the opportunity to sort of plan early with a client that, is responding to a market demand. Whereas with a private residential client, it's very whimsical. It's up to it's really what they want, and they may change their mind, and you deal with a different sort of brief in timing. Mm. So yeah.
Do clients or do Banda have a particular allegiance to any brands like Crestron, Lutron, or?
I think there's a sort of a confidence in those well-known brands. Mm. We can often be client-led. Some clients that are particularly tuned into AV or audio particularly have particular requests for products. We just finished a project in Dubai. And the client was very particular about some of these very expensive speakers that he bought and waited years for. And they had to be set up in the perfect place for him. And he had a chair, a very specific chair that sat at the right sort of distance between the two.
It was amazing.
Yeah. It was incredible, yeah. But that was very much client-led. Yeah. So you do respond to each client differently.
Yeah, but I'm just sort of trying to figure out how helpful you find it if an integrator comes to you and they've already got a preset kind of allegiance to brands. Do you find that helpful or problematic?
It can be helpful. Quite often the design team needs to be sort of, I hate this, but jack of all trades, master of none. So we do rely on information that comes through, and quite often we are reliant, on what's put in front of us unless we're challenged by a client. Mm. Or a budget. Mm. We have to respond to that.
I think what's interesting is that in the commercial AV space, it's very different to the experience that we've just been talking about.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, it's been like that ever since. So I spent most of my career in the luxury residential side. And then when I left the integrator, I found it, I moved into that commercial space, and I was quite amazed at how different the industry is. And it's been like that for over 20 years.
Mm.
You have consultants that take the client on a journey. They go through that advice, the design stages, get it to a point of tender, and then integrators take over. And what was amazing to me is there's such a good relationship between consultants and integrators. And I think that there's a bit of a threat with people like me and Mark coming into the industry in the resi world, because they think we're taking away business. But I have to say, if you speak to integrators in the commercial world, they love consultants. And the reason they do is because when you're an integrator and you get a design done by another integrator that's done the consultancy, it ends up being very vague, and they make it vague on purpose so that it's very hard for other people to bid. So what ends up happening as an integrator is I'd get it land on my desk, and I'd probably sit there for a week or two trying to design it, trying to then put it together into bill of materials and issue it for tender. Whereas when you've got a consultant on it in the commercial world, you get a full bill of materials and design. You can turn that project around in a couple of days. So you've got to look at it as kind of your win rate as an integrator as well. Like, we used to win 20% of our tenders. If I spend 2 weeks designing one job, I only win 20%. That's poor quality, poor time efficiency.
Yeah.
So in the commercial world, it's very different. You know, they go into that process, you bid for a project very easily, and it's monitored. So make sure that if somebody comes in and they're lowballing the project, the consultant identifies it. So, I mean, I see it as a benefit to the industry on both sides, the client and the integrator. And if I was an integrator again, and I had consultants that would just pass projects to, for us to bid, and they were accurate, that would be a nice change of world for me as an integrator.
Yeah. You're getting pre-qualified leads, effectively, because you're not having to find out what that budget is. It is, that's defined. You've done a lot of the hard work. People forget, I think, that design in the industry isn't just a bit of AutoCAD and some schematics. The design is actually saying, okay, this is what the client needs. How, what technology can we apply to that? How do these bits go together? And as Sam said, that is time consuming and actually a real skill to get right.
And I think it's different. It's a different way of thinking for an integrator, particularly if they've been used to dealing just directly with the client or with the client's architect or designer on a project, that to go through a consultant feels like, oh, you're just adding an extra step. You don't need to do that.
100%. And I do get it. I totally understand the situation change. But I think we've got to look at where the industry's going. And if we go back 15 years, the smart home industry, if we're just talking about the home industry, the smart home industry 15 years ago was worth about $5 billion globally. Today, it's worth $120 billion. And they're saying that by 2030, it's going to be a $1 trillion industry. So if you look at the growth of this, the industry is rapidly changing. And with anything that changes like this rapidly, you've got to evolve with it. And this approach now, I think the residential industry is changing. The approach to projects is changing. We're seeing more project managers and QSs come into the luxury residential industry, whereas I think historically a lot of architects and interior designers would manage them. Mm-hmm. You know, so the industry is evolving, but it's evolving for the better. Because everybody's got their, is going to sit in their lane and do what they're good at. And for me, you know, I want to work with integrators because, you know, I want to see good integrators do good work. One of the reasons we've had a bad rep in our industry as an industry, the smart home industry, is that there are those cowboys out there that do bad work. And then suddenly clients get phased because they have a bad experience. We're here to stop that. So we're helped to bring a bit of a better refinement to the industry. And it'd be great to see clients walking back into a space again and saying how they can't look, you know, they're looking forward to their next smart home.
Yeah.
When's the last time you, Mark, had a client say that?
All the time from one client. No. Oh, yeah. Historically, as an integrator, yeah, it was a challenge. I think, you know, there used to be a badge of honor that said, integrators, yeah, we're on site at the, we're the last people on site. That's not a badge of honor. That is a, some saying something's going wrong here in the process, in the delivery process.
Yeah, yeah. And James, I mean, if take back to your earlier comment where you described yourself very, very sort of modestly as a jack of all trades, having expertise, independent expertise to advise you and guide you is actually really important.
It is. And Mark's come in on a few of our projects, and it's not been, we've had to sort of prime the client and explain the benefit of Mark coming in at such an early stage. There's always been that comment of, okay, but we only want a light touch, you know, and I think that then evolves. But I think it is caution from the client, another outlay, another face to meet and to open up privately to how they want to live in their homes, I think. But when it the two situations that it has worked really well, we've got a great product that's being planned for, coordinated, integrated early in the infrastructure of the MEP, and they're going to be fantastic projects, and the client's going to get exactly what they wanted.
I think, yeah, there's one that James and I just starting to work on where I've been fortunate to be brought in at stage one, which is unheard of. But actually, to even consider what the client needs and wants, we've got to work with the building and undertake a feasibility study, because it's not been designed how you'd expect it. It's a recent construction, multi-apartments, it's not constructed quite how you'd expect, and therefore some of the services are challenging. So we're having to, myself and the MEP consultant, carry out a feasibility study to say, okay, this is what we understand the client would like, can we actually achieve it? And we're having to do that at stage one. Can you really do that with an integrator? Or can an MEP consultant do that on their own? They probably could, but they might find it a bit of a challenge.
And I would imagine that an MEP consultant working with an integrator might feel the integrator is just trying to sell me stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, consultant to consultant, it's much more of a collaborative approach.
Exactly. It's a professional approach at the end of the day. It's a professional design team. I'm not saying integrators aren't professional, but it is a, you know, you have a professional team, client side team for a reason.
So can an integrator be a consultant as well as an integrator?
No. Well, I say, I go, so when I started doing this 2 years ago, I would have said yes. But actually, more recently, my perspective has changed. I don't think it's possible. The sales consultancy side, shall we say, I mean, a lot of integrators will say they're consultants, but their focus is to sell. And that sales mindset is very, very different from a needs-based consultancy. And that, so, and I don't believe that, let's say, an integrator might go to a meeting in the morning and have their sales hat on, meeting in the afternoon and have their consultant hat on. You can't change flip-flop like that. It's just, it's too much of a challenge. And I think, I mean, I'm hearing on the grapevine at the moment that a lot of integrators are considering setting up consultancies as well. To try and, I think it's been identified that there is a need, and you know they're obviously following some of my lead in this. But unless you've got a total firewall separation between a consultancy part of the business and the integrator part of the business, I don't think it's achievable. You have to have separate staff. Yes, you might have back office, share accountancy, that side of things. But your consultant, your CAD, all of that should be separate from the actual integration. And there should be a clear definition that says, right, yes, we're going to do the tender design and we'll remain on board as a consultant. We will absolutely not tender for this work. That has to be clear. And I don't, you know, if as a consultant and you've got those two branches to your business, if a client turns around way through design and says, oh, we'd like you to carry on and deliver it, are you going to say no? Because, you know, that's a nice bit of business there that's coming your way.
Also, what's quite funny about that is if they ask you to stay on, so is the consultancy arm of your business going to monitor the integrator side of your business during construction and handover? Because part of the process we do is when you get it to tender, that's part of that. It's then to monitor the integrator till the end of the project. And this is where it's really key for the client, because it could throughout construction steer away from the design that we've put in. So quite often part of it is to monitor the integrator. We sign off their drawings, comment, make sure they're as per the design and it's compliant. But then towards the end of the project, we'll actually go in and do witness testing. So rather than the client having to take it from gospel from the integrator, that job is finished, we actually will go in and monitor and test the system. We check all the functionality. And I would always sign off each route to say, this is commissioned, it's complete. How can you do that if it's your sister company that's delivering it? You're not going to ever turn around and go, well, actually, the workmanship's really poor, so we're not going to sign this off. So there is that element as well.
It's a mug delivery homework.
Yeah, exactly.
It's part of the biggest process of it. And it's actually very nice for the integrator, because I think every integrator out there will say that trying to finish a project and draw a line with the client to say, this job is now complete, is one of the hardest parts to do. If you said to me, Sam, you know, pick last 15 projects as an integrator, when was your finish date? I couldn't give you a date. Mm-hmm. Because the client would always say, you know what, Sam, can I change the lighting scenes in the house again? Or actually, I want to do this, change the system. Or can we change the cinema room slightly? I want to put this film. You end up doing it as part of the contract. Mm-hmm. And they've got you over a barrel. Whereas as a consultant, we draw the line. So we actually say, no, the client, the job's finished, Mr. Client. That's now handed over. Any further works is an additional contract, additional work. The integrator can then issue their service contract. Mm. They have got a finite date to when that system is handed over. So it's really nice from an integrator perspective that the client's just not going to keep feeding you more bits and pieces to do as part of your original contract.
I can definitely see that, and very attractive. But is this a sort of world that you recognise?
Mm, definitely. We have the same thing, pulling away from clients, aftercare, closing projects. It's a well sort of well trodden path, I think, in the project.
But I think part of that issue comes back to, you know, what gets issued at the start of a project when an integrator gets appointed. It's often a bill of materials, a quotation.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can take a speaker, it can do one thing. You can take a touchscreen, it can do another thing. That light switch could be doing 20 different things. It depends who the integrator is that's taken it on. Mm. So actually, without the specification, a really, really clear, detailed operational specification at tender, no one knows what they're getting. The client doesn't know what they're getting. And I think that's actually such a critical point at the moment. Mm. Is let's move away from just issuing a bill of materials and saying, yeah, sign up to this. We need 200,000 from you and you're going to get this. They'd be better off having a specification without an itemized list. Yes, we can say within that is going to have this brand of lighting control, this brand of speakers, everything like that. But it's actually clear to say this switch, when you walk into this room, will be doing this. Mm. That's what they need. And at the end of the day, yeah, here's a figure at the bottom of that that says, we'll do that for 200,000.
Don't just keep up with the industry, get ahead of it. Join us for ISE 2026 in Barcelona. Use our special code IntegratedHomePod for free registration at iseurope.org.
I think it's fair to point out as well that this market has grown. Mm. And there are integrators who've got very close, deep, special relationships with clients, mm. directly with clients. Yeah. And the client isn't really interested in opening things up to tender because they know they want to use their AV guy. So why would they use an AV consultant? Whereas a company like James, where they're a big company working with a big range of consultants, architects, designers, MEP consultants, the whole kit and caboodle, absolutely. So do you like having your heads projects that are really suitable for consultants as opposed to ones that actually aren't?
I think any project is suitable for a consultant, but like you say, and if the client has got an incumbent AV company, it may not be suitable to bring in a consultant. And actually, they've got that trust relationship. Yeah. And if they can turn around and introduce that company to the likes of James at an early point and say, look, we're comfortable with them, we trust them, we've done 5 projects with them, please bring them on and work with them at stage 2 and through the design process. Absolutely. There's no quibble there. That's the right approach. But I'd say, yeah, any project can value from a consultant, whether it's having to go through the full REBA process or it's a small upgrade and they just want a little bit of advice, a little specification, and then that goes out to tender. It doesn't necessarily have to be a full design process that takes 12 months, 18 months.
And actually, all of this goes back to that first point, one of the first points you made about education, that there's just really not enough agreement, not enough education about what smart home, which I actually don't particularly like that. That's smart. But what our industry actually delivers, and that's a big problem.
There's a lot of focus is put onto, I can say, the pretty pictures, you know, the cinemas that look gorgeous, and there's a big thing around immersive spaces at the moment, and that's great. And we can, we can love that side of it. I love, sitting in a beautifully built cinema. But actually, at the end of the day, what value does the client get most from their technology? It's in the operation of a home. Is the lighting working? Is the heating working? Is it making my life easier when I walk into this space? How's the security? is that all suited together? Is that actually making me feel secure, or do I just have a camera that's giving a nice wide view? What are we actually looking at? What are we trying to achieve? Ultimately, and I think this is what's being forgotten, is that the purpose of technology and why technology gets developed for things is to make people's lives easier. Fundamentally, that's the starting point.
Yeah.
And I think that gets ignored.
Is that how you look at technology on your projects?
Definitely. Just that point there, Mark, about, you know, now there's so much flexibility and optionality with technology. We were just talking to Lutron the other day about some blinds they've got in their house that work with circadian rhythms and times of the year. So they'll move at different times of the year. The blinds will open to reflect the sun's path. And I think, you know, this level of personalization and responsiveness to the environment in relation to sort of health and well-being now is becoming so important to people. The options that are around, you know, to have these things that respond so well and create this comfort, this convenience, and this health and well-being, I think is getting more and more and more and growing and growing.
Yeah. But similarly, if that, you know, if that isn't defined at the start, that the shades are going to move to the angle of the sun because it's managing your thermal gain of the property. Mm. And suddenly a client sat there, they're looking out their lovely picture window at their view, and the shades start coming down. What's going on? You know, at the end of the day, did I ask for that? Did I agree to that? Unless that's in that specification at the start, what are they getting? And should the, you know, yes, we do need to be looking at thermal management totally. And, you know, there's the whole purpose of that is very valid in terms of protecting interiors, managing that thermal gain, managing that comfort, that wellness, making sure a client gets as much natural light as possible. Because, you know, how many people are banging on about natural light at the moment and the value in that? But a client needs to have that choice and the ability to say, actually, I need to turn that off. I'm sipping my sundowner and I really like this view and I don't want my shades shutting at the moment. There's a balance that has to be drawn. And I think that's where those early conversations happen, educating the client that this is possible and trying to identify, is that of value to them? Do they care about it? Some of them don't care about it.
Again, another well-trodden point is that we're a technology industry. We don't sell technology, we sell something else, whether that's a lifestyle, whether that's what people feel or how it elevates their life and enriches it. And yet our industry always comes back to, well, it's a technology solution, but that's not really what clients would want in a brief, is it? Yeah. They wouldn't even know what they could say to
it's
make
what
themselves.
Technology
better.
Can do rather than it itself, right?
Yeah.
It's always secondary. Mm. So it's not the fact that the blinds come down; it's what the light does after the blinds have gone down and gone up. You know, it's interesting.
It's how things that our industry provides makes people feel, and that's really tricky to get across, particularly in a siloed construction industry where everybody's got a pot.
Yeah,
of services or products that they supply, and ours is one of those weird ones that cuts across so many of them.
But you see, doing too much. I mean, I think jumping back into the commercial world, and Sam, you've got more experience in here, but there is far more actual separation between AV, IT. All of those, yes, you've got people that work together, but there's different delivery teams doing that, and it works as far as I'm aware on the most part.
Yeah, the thought process is there. Does always work in reality sometimes, but yeah, they do. We usually, everything gets split up into four different categories. So you have your smart, AV, IT, and security. Sometimes that package is delivered all together, and sometimes the client will look at it from a risk management point of view and split the packages up, which becomes more complicated. But at the end of the day, like what they don't need education in is the fact they need a consultant. They understand they need one. They start looking at how they can deliver the project, you know, same way you might look at a home and go, well, actually, should I get the lighting designer to do the lighting control?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're doing the design, it's their It's their focus. That's what they're there to do. And there's a lot of lighting designers now that do the controls. You might look at the security and you might say, well, actually, I've got an intruder alarm company, so should they do the video surveillance? Mm. So it's just about understanding where to kind of go with the service. But I think certainly in the commercial world, they just understand that they want to give the client that kind of neutral advice.
And should the lighting control people be doing the lighting design? That's the flip side now that we're seeing as well.
Yeah, that's just because I think a lot of people are trying to take more of the pie as such, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's also, I think there's an issue around clients, because we're taught, anyone who watches Grand Designs or has watched Grand Designs will be looking at it thinking, clients think that they can project manage and design and do everything themselves anyway. So why need experts?
Why need any of us?
Yeah. Let's just move it on then. I mean, I've noticed recently an increase in distributors and manufacturers offering system design and specification services. That's a good thing, surely.
Is it? I think that I totally get where distributors are coming from these days. They're trying to support integrators with the design or initial designs so that, you know, they can offer a bit of a turnkey package. So, you know, you could send over a cinema room to a distributor and you could say, look, I don't have time at the moment to design this. Could you put together a design that I can go back to my client with? I think it's a very convenient way for integrators to operate, because, you know, you can just literally phone one distributor and have it done. But the issue with that is you're reliant on them designing your project. And this comes back to a kind of a professional indemnity issue where, you know, even if, let's say, you go to a distributor that's well known in the industry and they put a cinema design together for you, if you then put that into a bill of materials and you sell that to the client, if there's any issue with that design, that insurance will stop with the integrator. You won't be able to go back to your distributor and say, well, hold on, you gave me this design. You're selling that product to the client. And I think this is where we've got to be really careful with where the responsibilities sit on projects. And I think this is where it gets blurred a lot from integrators, is understanding CDM regulations and what is part of them to design, what's part of the design team to build. And then, yeah, like I say, distributors getting involved, helping integrators, it can be problematic. Mm. As an integrator, sometimes when I used to get designs, or most of the time I got designs, anything back from a manufacturer or a distributor, I would say most of the time it's wrong.
Okay.
And I used to sometimes get involved in projects where the manufacturer had met with the client because of the relationship. They had already put a bill of materials together, and quite often that bill of materials was wrong. Mm. So as an integrator, if you're putting reliance on your distributors or manufacturers, that's a real concern for me.
Mm. Interesting.
I think there's, I think I totally agree with Sam on that. There's also the issue of Chinese whispers. It's, yeah, the integrator's having the meeting with the client, getting the brief. They're then having to relay that brief to the distributor who's then designing it. You've got that, and you come back with this something weird, shall we say, not quite actually what the client wants, but then the integrator's time poor, so they're gone, right, yeah, this, we believe this is right, over to the client. Client signs up to it, and what they're getting at the end of the day. The other issue is reducing the options, reducing the pool of options. You know, the industry, with, you know, there's a limited number of distributors in the industry. They obviously have their range of products. So actually, if you're just going, if every integrator is going to those distributors and saying, oh, can you please design me this cinema, design me this multi-room audio system, you're getting copy and paste all across. We're back into the realms of, is that right for the client? Is that limiting the client's choice? I mean, what I say to my clients is, you know, I can offer a full palette of equipment of choice, because we're not tied to a distributor, we're not tied to brands. So conversations with James and say, right, here's some various options for switches. We're not tied. We're not going to say, right, it has to be this brand, this brand, this brand. Mm. And that what happens when you rely on a distributor to do the design.
It's an evolving industry, isn't it, James? I mean, things are changing the way that integrators are now more prominent in projects. I would suggest, you know, 40, 50 years ago, M&E consultants, there are M&E contractors. It's a very distinct split between who's the consultant, who's the contractor. And that seems to me the way that this industry is now evolving.
Yeah. And it has to, I think, to create that separation. I think it's really important. We were working with a security company the other day on a very high profile house for a client, and we had the security consultant was identifying the risk points for penetration of the house and, you know, weak points. But then the security install integrator came in and talked about how the actual system is going to operate. And then I realized they're two very separate things. And I think it's the same thing here with, you know, what we're talking about. You have to sort of separate them out and identify what is, you know, the approach and what is available and what's best suited for that specific case, and then how it operates and how it gets sort of integrated. So
it's certainly changing. And, you know, when I did a talk on Monday for Reba and Cedia, and we were sort of talking about how the industry's evolved over the last 15 odd 20 years. And, you know, our industry has sometimes got, you know, smaller by the year. So when the iPad came out in 2010, that absolutely changed our industry, because for years we were selling touch panels. You know, we had all these expensive remote controls that were going to clients, and we had lots of products that we're making margin out of. And then the iPad came out and we had the app explosion, and suddenly we lost all of our touch panel sales overnight, because suddenly clients could go and buy a £500 iPad that we made 5% on and buy an app, and actually that would control their home. You know, over the years we've seen, you know, things like video distribution drop off because things like SkyStream and all these services are coming out where people stream. So as an industry, an integrator industry, you know, our pot has got smaller over the last 15 years. And what we're finding is a lot of integrators are trying to take on other elements to make money out of. So security, you know, sometimes the security, the CCTV being underneath the integrator isn't the right solution, because if there's an intruder alarm system, it should be linked with that, so that it's all together as a cohesive system. But they're taking it on because it's more money. Mm. You know, there's more things to make product money out in product. I think what integrators need to see is they need to change their business model and actually go, well, we need to sell a service where we make our money, you know, refine our service so it's professional, rather than trying to always make money out of the products. And this is where the commercial market's different, in that they really focus on offering a professional service for what they do. So that whether you're buying Crestron or Logitech or Sonos, it's actually irrelevant to an integrator, because they don't really make their money on the product. They make their money on the service they're offering to the client.
Mm.
And that's the way it's going to go in the residential world, because margins are getting tighter. Manufacturers have told me that over the next 5-6 years, you're going to see a huge drop in margin availability on product. And it's going to get tighter and tighter. And if your business model is based on product profit margins, you won't have a business model. So my, you know, I always keep saying to integrators is, you know, focus on what you can do differently. I think if you ask most integrators, they'll say they don't get paid enough for designer management, prelims on projects, programming, commissioning. Well, that's what needs to change.
Mm.
You know, steer more towards charging the right fees and less about the products.
Mm. And from a developer's perspective, what would you like to see changing in the way you deal with technology?
Education, I think, definitely with the design team to understand more about product. That's, we can never get enough of that. And I think bringing consultants early on, like I've been in interior design for sort of 15, 20 years now. And it's only been the last couple of years I've been working with Mark and Woven to have an AV consultant come on board early. Is, if we can get it past the client and get them warmed up to the idea, it's really valuable. Mm. You know, they understand the optionality. Mark will come with a whole suite of different, you know, options for them to really suss out and define that brief, which I think we have to see more of that. But it has to happen at the right point in the process of brief involvement with the client.
One thing that just struck me as you were just talking there is that part of the problem is also that our industry has still not got a proper label. I mean, our object to smart home, AV. AV.
Yeah. Home technology is where I try and say, because we, you know, I cover that whole palette of options, whether it's security, whether it's AV, whether it's IT, whether it's lighting, heating. That's, I think, the best label.
Yeah.
I hate the term smart. It doesn't really reflect.
And it can be so much more than AV, and particularly if you know what CD is trying to push. They're pushing the wellness and that kind of area. They're trying to get integrators to open their minds to be able to sell more lighting and blinds as opposed to AV.
It's a huge change. I'm actually I'm a board advisor for Well, which is the certification for healthy buildings.
Yeah.
And they are changing some of the certification in the coming years so that we're planning for senior living. So that a lot of homes actually in the future, that if you buy a home or when you develop your home, if you're going to be there at retirement age, that it's ready for when you retire, and actually devices are connected.
Yeah,
family peace of mind.
Yeah.
There's all this aspect. So wellness is a huge area. And I think COVID definitely kickstarted that, but for the better.
Yeah.
So I see what Cedia are doing. It is a good thing.
Yeah. But again, if you talk to people in the industry now, they'll talk about, I mean, other professions will say, he's the AV guy. And that's
the
kind of
infiltrates technology, AV, that what we're talking about infiltrates all different elements of the home. So it's hard to pinpoint one thing because it affects the entire home and will do increasingly so as we evolve technology and homes become more smart.
and also with technology, I absolutely get home technology, but I've had so many conversations, particularly this year with interior designers, where you mention the word technology and it's like, you can immediately feel hands on the back going up, hackles raising, and it's just
because that is the focusing the technology on the equipment, not on what it's being applied to, how it's making their life easier.
Well, it's a funny industry, isn't it? Because why is it that certification for buildings being healthier and helping people's well-being, why do they have a technology arm for certification? Where we look at these things, and it's because technologies are seen as an opposing force to wellness. We all talk about too much screen time and, we need a digital detox.
Yeah.
All these things, but actually technology can promote well-being.
Yeah.
So when we look at offices, you know, we looked at a project recently where we're discussing, it's a Japanese company that are in London, and they were going to approach a company basically to create like a biophilia soundscape for their office. Yeah. Rather than walking in and having, you know, Barry White playing in the background or something, they actually wanted the sound of the Himalayas to play throughout their office.
Yeah.
And they're recording it so you can hear the different seasons of the Himalayas. So when you're sat at your desk, it feels like you're connected with nature.
Yeah.
So when you walk out of that street of a busy London with buses and all of that, and you walk into your environment, it feels like a bit of a sanctuary.
It's immersive, isn't it? And actually, I heard the other day that we spend 90% of our time indoors. Yeah. So we are now demanding indoors to be so much more outdoors.
I think this is a whole other podcast.
It is.
It's a fascinating conversation. I the vocabulary isn't right for what our industry is all about.
Maybe we're...
But it's what we've
got. It's operational consultancy. At the end of the day, we're consulting on how these buildings will operate, how clients will live in that space, touch that space, interact with it.
Thank you, James, Sam and Mark, for sharing all those insights with us today. Fascinating conversation, and I'm sure we'll be talking about more things in the future. You can find out more about The Integrated Home on our social channels at Integrated Home Podcast. The Integrated Home is brought to you with the support of Integrated Systems Europe. We support Together for Cinema, and we are a Wildwood Plus production. Thank you.
The Integrated Home supports Together for Cinema. Together for Cinema is a community interest company that collaborates with the AV industry to design and install cinema rooms in children's hospices and other deserving locations across the UK. So far, thanks to the huge generosity of manufacturers, distributors and integrators freely giving of their time, products and expertise, we've created 46 dedicated cinemas equivalent to an installation value of about £1.2 million. In these special places, families, staff and volunteers are now enjoying fantastic movie experiences together and helping to create very, very special memories. Help our industry continue to make a difference. Visit togetherforcinema.co.uk and find out how you can be involved to make short lives just that little bit better.